And on today's Windy City Career Cast, yep, I'm still feeling it. It's called Sick and I'm Not Well, but something involving a cock, something with a cock is helping me out. No, get your minds out of the gutter. Also, I want to let you know Richard Knight Jr. here with us to talk about a really fun queer cinema thing that he has going on at the Center on Halstead, way for GLBT people to get together and talk about movies. And also, something new and big is happening in cow country. What is going on in the farmlands of the United States that's not happening in the urban cities? I don't know, but it's really gay and it's really cool. And news and entertainment and much, much more. Plus, the sexy Kevin Thornton with me. He's got a new one-man show that is really hard to describe, but super fun, very autobiographical. Music, spoken word, storytelling, stand-up comedy, and just his overall sex appeal. It's all the same. It's just Kevin Thornton. Kevin Thornton here on the Windy City Queercast. Wow, I bring a lot to you, even when I'm sick.
Windy City Queercast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We are talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 296. I'm Amy Matheny, flying solo again because I'm contagious. Well, maybe I'm not, but my girlfriend's up and gone to Michigan, and I'm still hanging on with this cold. Anybody else got that spring cold? It's really not fun. What was fun was our fantastic night at Jackhammer, which I did pull out all the stops and make sure I was there, which basically means I stayed in bed so that I could go. But no, seriously, I am feeling a lot better. And it's all because of this wonder little tiny pack of pills that I put under my tongue called Oscillococcinum. I don't know. Oscillococcinum. I don't know. There's cox in there somewhere. I don't know. But it's supposed to be the French flu medicine. And man, has it helped me get better so fast. I'll try to find the spelling of it and put it in the show notes in case anybody else is suffering from this springtime flu. But man, Windy City Gay Idol just continues to heat up. Jackhammer, so awesome. And if you missed it, we're going to have pictures up on our website soon. So you can go to WindyCityMediaGroup.com and we're going to keep all of our pictures there of all our Windy City Gay Idol events. And it's good to see a lot of our listeners coming out to those as well. But wow, the historic news is that the Vermont legislature has now recognized marriage for gay and lesbian couples. That's right. It is the first time that they have had this vote, and the state Senate vote 23-5 and the House of Representatives 100-49. They overrode, is that a word? overrode Governor Jim Douglas's veto, and Vermont became the first state to recognize marriage for committed lesbian and gay couples through the legislative process. It's going to go in effect, folks, September 1st. What an awesome, awesome fall. And what's going on? All the farming states, like, you know, good old hearty countryside Vermont and good old hearty Iowa in the same week. We're so country, us GLBT people. So I don't know. You would think this would happen in major urban cities, but no, it is happening in more rural states. And I find that fascinating. I really do. I don't think Tennessee is going to be the next to go. But if it does, I'm sure I had something to do with it. And the many, many, many homosexuals that grew up in East Tennessee. But it's really pretty amazing that they, that's the way democracy works, folks. Even when the governor was going to ixnay the vote A, he didn't have enough and overwhelmingly passed. So congratulations, everyone in Vermont, yet another reason to move to the Northeast and, hit the Vermont cheese and, cows and lesbians and I guess two gay men at least. Somebody's got to represent the G and the GLBT in Vermont. That's the huge news of the week, and I'm so excited that I get to talk about it. Our show today is really interesting because, you know, a lot of my roots in working in gay radio when I started at Lesbi Gay Radio was with, you know, I did a lot of work with talking to people about spirituality and homosexuality. And I did a really great interview. There is no ego in that. I had a great interview that was a lot of fun with a great guy. He's a Midwest native, but coming back through here, Kevin Thornton. And some of you may know him from his underground new wave band, Wave on Waves. They've been seen on Logo. But he is bringing his one-man show, which he first did in Nashville, up to Chicago, April 23rd through May 9th. He's out in L.A. Currently, so you can catch him in L.A. if you want. And then he's going to be after Chicago, be in Cincinnati, Indianapolis, D.C., performing all around through July. And I had an opportunity to talk to him, and we really talked about how religion played a part in coming out for him. His show is called Sex, Dreams, and Self-Control. It's kind of a punk version of spoken word, music, comedy, storytelling, all of that. He's super, super cute. And I'm so thrilled that I got to sit down and talk with him about the new show. Plus, Richard Knight Jr. on this show is going to talk to you about his baby, which is not of the crying kind, but maybe the crying game kind. Richard Knight Jr. Helps put together a series every year where gay film critics come together and talk about gay movies, and it's kicking off at the Center on Halsted. So he's going to give you some information on that as we go tonight at the movies with Richard Knight Jr., Queer Cinema 101. Go out, and there's a number of events where you can watch a great film with some gay people and listen to movie critics who are GLBT talk about it, which is really fantastic. And Richard puts this whole series together. And I do want to remind everybody that the Joffrey Ballet has invited us to go meet those sexy dancers. That's right. They're having an exclusive event on April the 16th, and it's at the new Joffrey Tower. And that is just a beautiful facility. I love it. It's glass, and you can watch those dancers dancing in there. Oh, just brilliant. If you want to go, the doors open at 6:30. The program begins at 7. They're going to be performing some pieces from their spring program, and then they're going to have a reception following that. So it's a really nice couple hours of a night with some sexy dancers in tights. Boys run, don't walk. So RSVP at joffrey.org if you'd like to attend. RSVP at joffrey.org or call 312-386-8904. Plus, there's other news. Besides Vermont, coming up later on in the show. And and I do have to mention, speaking of dance, this is past tense because I went last week, but I had the opportunity to see the Alvin Ailey 50th anniversary performance here when they were here in Chicago for four nights only. And all I have to say is if you're in a city where Alvin Ailey is coming, you really should attend. It is quite a moving night of theater. In 50 years, what a legacy this man left behind for African Americans and for the world of dance. What a stunning accomplishment. And I really just have to rave about it and say they're still on tour. And if you get a chance, please go see them. So, I don't know. I'm talking about the dance today. I'm talking about, God, I'm a dancer. A dancer dances. And A Chorus Line's coming to town. First musical I ever saw. Oh, that was way too stream of consciousness. All right, folks, sit back, relax. I'm going to do some healing with my osteococcineum, something with a cock, and we'll be back.
Hi, I'm a Miller Lite brewmaster.
Yeah, and I'm a Miller Lite drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
I just created a revolutionary aluminum pint bottle. Great new way to enjoy the taste of Miller Lite.
Wow. See, I just designed a new game day delicacy to be enjoyed with your great tasting beer, the 8-layer dip.
Well, the aluminum pint has a wider mouth, giving every sip a superior flow that delivers the great taste.
That's terrific. Most people flow from beef to bean to sour cream to cheese to guacamole to salsa to veggies. See, I'm not most people, though. I flow all the way to jambalaya.
Also, it's got a resealable cap that makes sure every sip tastes as fresh as the first.
Well, my dip is so hearty, it can last from a day game to a night game.
This isn't a competition, you know.
Okay, fine. You advance the science of drinking great-tasting beer, and I advance the art of enjoying it.
Introducing the new aluminum pint bottle from Miller Lite. Just another way for you to enjoy the great taste. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News. The New Hampshire House has killed an anti-discrimination measure that would have protected trans individuals. Proponents of the bill, led by the Republican Party, had called it the bathroom bill because they argued it would open all bathrooms to men and women. They said that women and children could be put at risk if men were allowed into women's bathrooms.
Lisa Large, a lesbian Presbyterian deacon, has again been stopped from applying for ordination. A church commission has rejected the process used by the Presbytery of San Francisco to allow her candidacy for ordination. Large has had previously stated her disagreement with a ban on sexuality active gays serving as clergy within the Presbyterian Church, USA.
In Missouri, Democratic State Senator Jolie Justice has said that her resolution honoring the Heartland Men's Chorus has been rejected because it mentions gay men and combating homophobia. Senate President Charlie Shield said he won't sign the resolution because some lawmakers might not want to be attached to it, although state legislators approve hundreds of such courtesy resolutions annually.
In California, Shirley Tan is scheduled to be deported back to the Philippines, leaving behind her life partner and their 12-year-old twin sons. Tan married her partner in San Francisco in 2004, but the marriage was later nullified. However, even if it were not voided, the Federal Defense of Marriage Act would have prevented her wife from sponsoring Tan. If they were a heterosexual couple, the marriage would have been legal.
In Georgia, the race for the Atlanta City Council's District 6 seat appears to be a rematch between lesbian incumbent Ann Fauver and gay consultant Steve Brody. Brody announced his candidacy April 2nd, prompting gay teacher Charlie Stotlander, who was backed by several influential people in the LGBT community, to withdraw. Ann Fauver defeated Brody in 2005 by 5 votes. The election will take place in November.
And in world news, in London, Microsoft has settled a case with a worker who sued the computer giant for alleged discrimination. Jamie Durant, who earned about $100,000 a year designing video games for Microsoft's Xbox 360 console, claimed that the company did not take action despite complaints of being harassed by fellow employees. Durant was seeking $90,000 in damages, but the settlement terms are confidential.
Sweden has legalized same-sex marriage, becoming one of 5 European countries to do so. The country's parliament passed an equal marriage statute by a vote of 261-22 with 16 abstentions. The new law will be in effect on May 1st. Other countries that have legalized gay marriage include Canada, South Africa, the Netherlands, Belgium, Norway, and Spain.
And in entertainment news, lesbian tennis icon Martina Navratilova was the runner-up on the British reality TV show I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, losing to soap opera actor Joe Swash. At one point, Navratilova had to have cockroaches, stick insects, grasshoppers, and snakes crawl over her face for 5 minutes. Ooh.
Actor James Franco of Milk has been chosen as the commencement speaker at UCLA, and some students are not happy about it. More than 200 people have joined the UCLA Students Against James Franco as Commencement Speaker group on Facebook. The group has made its own suggestions, including Deepak Chopra, Rush Limbaugh, and even Tyra Banks. Franco graduated from UCLA and even won several creative writing awards while he attended the school.
actress and Windy City Queercast co-host Alexandra Billings stars in the Mario Bagnier's transgender tale, Stealth, which is spotlighting the unfortunate intolerance of society and the reinforcing power of acceptance. Billings has the lead as Veronica Terranova. Filming begins this month.
And gay screenwriter Dustin Lance Black of Milk and TV's Pedro and Big Love is one of the individuals selected by Details Magazine as its 2009 Mavericks. Others on the list include Family Guy creator Seth MacFarlane and actor Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey everybody, this is Richard Knight Jr., your Night at the Movies Minute film critic with news about an exciting new film series being held in Chicago. Queer Cinema 101 is the title of a new five-week Monday night series that will screen either essential or overlooked film titles in the GLBT film canon, personally selected and hosted by the participating gay film critics, including yours truly. The series is the first time that openly gay movie critics from Chicago's GLBT publication, Chicago Free Press, Gay Chicago, Windy City Times, of course, as well as Time Out Chicago, will jointly present a film series. How about that, huh? On Monday, April 13th, I'll be hosting the premiere offering the tremendous 1996 documentary, The Celluloid Closet. Narrated by Lily Tomlin and based on the late Vita Russo's classic book, the film is a clipped, stuffed, historical overview of gays and lesbians in the first 100 years of movies. Time Out Chicago's film section editor and critic, Hank Sarton, will next host Todd Haynes' 1998 Velvet Goldmine, a Citizen Kane-like fictional look at the bisexual world of glam rock on Monday, April 20th. It's hot. Think Ewan McGregor, Full Frontal, The Killing of Sister George, the 1968 lesbian cam classic, will be hosted by gay Chicago film critic Charlie Showquist on Monday, April 27th, followed by 1986's Parting Glances, hosted by Chicago Free Press film critic Greg Shapiro on Monday, May 4th. Parting Glances is a loving examination of a gay couple at a turning point in New York City. It was one of the first indies to deal frankly with AIDS and other issues relevant to the GLBT community. The series concludes with Blake Edwards' 1982 gender-bending musical Victor Victoria, which stars Julie Andrews and Robert Preston. Beloved by the gay community, and you should know why, the hilarious film, which will be hosted by gay Chicago editor and film critic Jonathan Lewis, squeezes in plenty of arguments for gay rights amongst the lavish musical numbers and comedic sexual mix-ups, and there's a lot of them. Each screening will be followed by a Q&A with audience members, and all five of the critics, all of us, will participate in a roundtable discussion following both The Silent Closet and Victor Victoria. This series is being partly sponsored by Sidetrack and by www.hannahfree.com. The trailer for the forthcoming lesbian-themed film Hannah Free, starring Sharon Gless, none other, will be shown before each of the screenings. All the films will be shown at 7 p.m. at the Center on Halsted, 3656 North Halsted in the Hoover Leppin Theater in Chicago. Seating is on a first-come, first-seated basis. A $5 suggested donation is requested. How is that cheap? I can't believe it. Don't live in the Chicagoland area? Queer Cinema 101 is the perfect excuse for you to fly in and join us. Visit nightatthemovies.com for further information. Be there or be queer. Well, be queer, but be there anyway.
5, 6, 7, 8!
Thousands audition, 24 get to the stage. But in the end, only 8 will win the chance to dance. This is the story of the ones who make it and the ones who don't. A Chorus Line, the best musical ever.
Begins April 14th at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts Oriental Theater. For tickets, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Cast recording available on Masterworks Broadway.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative. Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of April 6th, 2009, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. About Face Theater proudly presents a benefit performance of Theater BAM Chicago's Schoolhouse Rock Live, one night only, Wednesday, April 22nd at Mary's Attic, 5400 North Clark Street. Doors at 7 o'clock, show at 8. Tickets are only $20. Don't miss this fun-filled fundraiser, an hour-long adaptation of the beloved Emmy Award-winning animated series. Help benefit About Face Theater's Face the Future campaign and come out for some laughs in a trip down memory lane.
American Theater Company, in association with About Face Theater, presents Hedwig and the Angry Inch by John Cameron Mitchell and Stephen Trask, an award-winning rock musical about a young East German who gives up a little part of himself in order to escape communism for freedom in the U.S. Hedwig and the Angry Inch is a witty and moving exploration of identity and triumph over adversity, playing now through May 17th at American Theater Company. Tickets at atcweb.org.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical, Million Dollar Quartet, now extended at the Apollo Theater. Don't miss this show. For tickets to Million Dollar Quartet, visit Ticketmaster.com. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi, this is Hedda Lettuce, the future president of the United States, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast. And remember, people, don't drink and drag. Good night.
Kevin Thornton is bringing his show Sex, Dreams, and Self-Control to the Boho Theater at the Heartland Studios in April and May here in Chicago. He's also going to be on tour, though, folks. So if you listen to us from another city, he's going around the U.S. He'll be hitting the West Coast out in L.A. and D.C. on the East Coast and a little bit in the middle here with Indianapolis and Cincinnati, all getting to see this show that is called A Fusion of Music, Spoken Word, and Stand-Up Comedy. He's an openly gay singer. Many of you may know him from his underground new wave band Wave on Waves, seen on Logo. But he's a Midwest native, so let's welcome him home. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Hi, doing good.
Good. So you're living kind of down in my Tennessee old stomping grounds.
I am. I'm not there much anymore because I'm on the road most of the time now. But
yeah.
As it stands now, I'm booked solid through July. I get to go home for 1 week in June, I think, and that's about it.
Yeah. Nashville has changed so much since I was considering going to Vandy, but I just didn't know if I could wear my pearls every morning by 9 a.m. But,
right.
but tell me, it really is kind of like the Vegas of the South or the L.A. Outside of L.A. I mean,
There's actually a fairly new trend. Someone started making t-shirts that says Nashville is the new LA.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of LA transplants in Nashville. You know, but it's really easy to live there. And there really is a kind of small radius of forward thinking people in like downtown Nashville. And if you do like a 5 mile radius around downtown Nashville, it's fairly progressive.
Yeah.
But you're definitely surrounded by not progressive, so
yes.
It's a weird mix. But
I know.
I like it. It feels like home to me. The cost of living is low. There's a decent amount of culture, so
yep.
I dig it.
And you have Nicole Kidman and Keith Urban, the cute lesbian couple down there. I like to refer to them as the lesbian couple, the cute fashionable lesbian couple.
Believe it or not, I see them all the time.
Do you really?
Yeah, they go to the coffee house right next to my apartment, at least once a week.
Okay, you and I are going to talk, and I got to hang out with you for at least a week so I can see Nicole Kidman.
She's
need to have
really
a spot
tall in. And kind of China doll-esque.
Yeah, I mean, I'm having a little problem with the overexposure of Botox that somehow is growing from the Australian bark down there, and it's just very easy for her to shoot into her face. But other than that,
yeah,
I really love
it's
her.
It's natural,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about your, did you for a long time think of yourself as like a singer and that's what you did and that's why you went to Nashville? Is that what you wanted to be when you grew up?
My whole life I've kind of dabbled in every area of performance. Mm-hmm. In school, I was always in the play, the fall play and the spring play. I ran for class president just so I could give the speeches. I'm serious. And I almost kind of used that as one of my first stand-up comedy routines. I needed to be in front of people and try out new things. Mm. And, I went to school for theater performance. But by the time I was graduating, and I'd been immersed in that kind of college theater scene for so long, I was like, you know what? I want to record an album. And kind of impulsively just went straight to Nashville and did that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was Wave on Waves?
No, actually, that was more of like a solo project. And okay. The two guys who played with me on that album stuck with me for a decade. And
wow.
So eventually we changed the name to Waves on Waves. And they've been with me ever since.
Do you think that Logo is really giving a resurgence and really shining a lot of attention on bands that didn't have it before by having that outlet, and so people can actually get to know groups they didn't know?
Well, I'd like to think so. I mean, it's been that way for us. They've given us quite a bit of play time, and we've gotten some new fans that way that totally would have never heard of us had it not been for that channel. So
yeah,
for us, it's worked out.
Yeah, that's amazing. So talk to me about how you came to solo performance work. I mean, it sounds like it was in your blood. You wanted to get up in front of people and speak and talk, and you were looking for outlets to do that. But it's a little different to get up and do a performance piece that's fairly autobiographical and pretty open and raw and vulnerable. How did you come to that form to do this, as opposed to just continuing to maybe write songs or play other characters? Why was this important to you to tell your story and be in front of people as yourself?
You know, it's something that I think I've been subconsciously writing in the back of my mind for many years, because when I finally sat down to do it, it just flew out of me. I completed the first draft, a solid 90 minutes of material in like 5 weeks. But the kind of interesting thing about how the real genesis of it, I didn't really know what the end product was going to be. I didn't really sit down initially and say, I'm going to write a one-man show. The band was taking a break. I had just broken up with my boyfriend, and I was kind of in this weird funk space. And I'd always said the kind of the realm of performance that scared me the most was stand-up comedy. Hmm. And for whatever reason, I'm like, okay, now is the time in my life where I need to try that. So I really just wrote like 3 minutes of material 1 week, and I went to an open mic and just read it. And the audience just kind of blew up on me. I mean, like, they responded way more positively than I really had hoped for.
Now, where was this, and was it a gay audience?
It was not a gay audience. It was the first time I did it was like a Nashville, like, country music writers round.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really out of place. And there were definitely some people that I would assume would not necessarily be gay friendly.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. There's something about it that the whole scene seemed kind of edgy and risky. And I'm like, I just have to do this, and I have to do it right now. So after that first night, the audience responded so well, it really just kind of lit some kind of little creative spark in me. Because afterwards, I was like, really? Well, I've got more where that came from. And all the next week, I worked on a new 3 or 4 minutes. And I went up and did it again. And same thing, they just responded so well. And I just kept going back week after week. And after about 5 weeks, I had about an hour's worth of material.
Wow.
And it was, of course, it was totally rough. But I was like, after that, I had that kind of first draft of and it all kind of had the same, I was writing about this kind of journey I took, in my early 20s, of coming to terms with my sexuality in a really super Christian fundamentalist setting.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of conflict there, and there's kind of, you know, pain gives birth to laughter, I think, or it can anyway.
Right.
And it does for me.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how it started. I didn't really sit down and think, I'm going to write a one-man show. I just kind of was doing these small little bits. And after a while, I had enough bits, and it had kind of a theme. That's when I was like, I think I have a show here.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through and started really refining everything. And then when I had that done, I knew that what was really going to take it up a notch was if I wrote original music that went with the piece. So it's kind of an odd mix of, like you said in the beginning, it's a weird mix of like storytelling and stand-up comedy, and then I take breaks and I sing a song. And so it's this hodgepodge of all these different performance types that really work together. So that's what it is.
Talk to me about how you incorporated music in your show. Were there themes that were coming out or stories you knew you wanted to tell more as a song?
No, actually, you know, I had just seen Spring Awakening on Broadway. I got to see the original cast last year. And I was so inspired by that show. It was unique in the sense that because Duncan Sheik, who was a pop mm-hmm. music writer, wrote mm-hmm. all the music for this Broadway show. And none of the music really furthers the storyline in that show. It's just like they kind of take these weird breaks and sing a song that more expresses the mood or the emotion of whatever's happening in the story, but the songs themselves don't actually further the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that. So I kind of did the same thing with my piece. The songs don't really tell you what's happening. It more just is kind of an expression of what's happening at that moment in the story. And it's really effective. I think that some of the music is definitely some of the more moving parts of my show.
Do you have influences besides Duncan Sheik? I mean, who kind of, you would say, helped shape the tone or the voice that you bring to the stage in telling your own story?
Yeah. You know, well, my favorite, as far as like as a rock band musician, my favorite band in the world is The Smiths.
Hmm.
And I kind of grew up listening to that. I've never stopped listening to that. And I would, as I was learning to sing as a teenager, I learned to sing along with Morrissey. So that flavor is in my voice. But as I'm getting older, someone said, you know, you need to go listen to John Hiatt. And I didn't know who that was, but I just kind of started doing some YouTube stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of, he's an older man, and he has kind of this Elvis Costello vibe in his voice, but it's a little raspier. So I love that. And that's kind of been an influence on me lately. What was the question?
Well, no, I just didn't know, too, if there were are there performers that you think kind of do what you're trying to do well? I mean, when I hear about you, you know, I definitely think of, you know, Sandra Bernhardt, who's been here a number of times, to Steppenwolf
yeah.
and the Park West. And, you know, she really has a great use of incorporating her cabaret and
yeah.
her music director into kind of her musings on her own life. You know, in a way.
I would definitely say that Sandra Bernhardt has been an influence in creating this. I really love how she kind of gives no responsibility to herself to make literal sense all the time. I love how she'll do these kind of offbeat stories and then bust out into Midnight Train to Georgia.
Yeah.
And it all works. Like, it makes sense. It makes sense because it makes sense to her. And,
yeah.
I will say definitely in my earlier versions of the show, my show kind of made less literal sense. My first kind of version, there were about 8 vignettes that all kind of had to do with the same thing. And then I would take breaks and I was singing songs that I'd already written in the past that just kind of worked for me. And that was, I kind of took that cue from Sandra Bernhardt, that I kind of put songs in that didn't necessarily make literal sense, but somehow it made sense to me, and I thought it worked.
Mm-hmm.
As the show grew, I had more of a desire to have a more literal storyline and a dramatic arc and a climax, and I wanted the music to make more sense in the show. So I actually ended up scrapping all of the music and wrote music specifically for this piece.
Hmm. So what is the sex and the dreams and the self-control? Is this a coming of age story of, I mean, you sound like you're a dreamer. You sound like you're someone who can have a vision of something for yourself and go out and grab it. Obviously, sexuality, a big part of your life. Where does the self-control come in? Looking for some or resisting it?
Well, the story that I'm telling, first let me start with the dreams part. I've always had kind of this like lucid dream thing going on. I've always dreamed very vividly. And I remember this dream I had when I was a teenager where I was floating. This is so Freudian. I was floating. My bedroom was filled with water, like it was like a little miniature lake. And I was floating in the bedroom in a boat with my mother. And, you know, like those are like the water thing and the mother thing. And
after that, you woke up gay, Kevin. You woke up gay after that. That's what happened.
It's that dream that did it. But that dream has always stuck with me. And it was just a very vivid dream. And I actually put that into the show. There's actually that dream keeps reoccurring throughout the piece, and I don't want to give too much away, but it does that dream kind of serves a really neat purpose in the show, and there was the sex and the dreams, and really I remember writing that down, and the phrase sex, drugs, and rock and roll kind of flashed through my mind. Which I wanted the show to have that kind of edge to it. So that's kind of evolved into sex, dreams, and self-control. The self-control is basically growing up in the Christian setting and trying to like control this beast within that was uncontrollable, you know? So that's the self-control part, I guess.
Did you really, we've heard in some of your clips, the want to change, the ability to see the images of ex-gays, so to speak. Is that a big part of your story, the determination to maybe change and reverse the inevitable, if that's the way you
viewed it? It is a big part of my story. I actually gave it a shot for a while there. And, you know, sometimes I think about how I came so close to just, like, forcing myself into some sort of, like, Christian marriage, thinking that might fix it. Like, there's a couple times I remember in my late teens, early 20s, where I came so close to being that person, and I'm so thankful that I wised up. What a nightmare it would have been. And, you know, after my show, I've had so many people come up to me and say, who maybe did get married and have children. Actually, I was thinking my final night in Nashville, this 45-year-old man came up to me with tears in his eyes and was telling me that he's in the process of getting a divorce and and he has four children, but he's just now admitting in his life that he's gay. And I don't want to overblow what I'm doing by any means, but I feel like every time someone tells me something like that, I get more of a fire underneath me that our attitudes have to change. We have to stop forcing people into these ridiculous scenarios. Life is too short, and I could just feel that I moved this man this evening because I think he was still battling all this guilt and this lifetime of guilt, it's just no good.
Yeah. And it is good, I've always heard that laughter is the sound of healing. So in the way that you've found laughter to, take what was painful at one time and show the absurdity because you're separate from it now, right? You're detached, and so you can look at it and laugh. So tell me, you said you really wanted it to have this feel of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I guess I have to ask, do you get naked in this show? Because the photo, as everybody sees on our show notes, it's very sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I want to know if that's a literal nakedness that's happening in this show, or is this more a metaphor for living life nakedly?
It's metaphorical. I'm emotionally nude. No, I don't actually take my clothes off, no.
Aw. The boys will still come, Kevin. And the lesbians will feel like we don't have to wear glasses with, any kind of shades on them. Well, let me tell you, it looks like a fantastic show. Definitely the reviews say, you know, this is not your normal coming of age, coming out story. Talk about your artistry. You've been reviewed quite extensively and well for this show, and I can't wait for it to come to Chicago. You will be in the Chicago area at the Boho Theater, Bohemian Theater Ensemble at Heartland Studios. That's in Rogers Park. It's going to be a late night show, which is super fun and a big tradition of that here in Chicago, April 23rd through May 9th. Kevin is in LA April 3rd through 18th, and he has other dates in Cincinnati, Indianapolis, and DC May through July. So something really great to do during the Pride season. We will have his website linked on our show notes, but you can check him out at sexdreamsandselfcontrol.net about the tour and information. You can see his cute pictures and read all about Kevin Thornton. Kevin, thanks so much for being on the Queercast with me.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
We'll see you at the show. Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, I hope you get out to see some of the amazing shows, especially Kevin Thornton in town. And I hope I'm 100% by the next podcast. I can't stand it. I'm putting on a bright, shining face. But we're headed off to the next Gay Idol, which is going to be at Spin. And that's always super, super fun. And have you been there? They've expanded the place. It's like triple the size. That place is off the hook. I mean, I hear Frat Boy Thursdays or Tuesdays or I don't know. Don't they have frat boys there every day? I hear that's really the deal, the dealio right now, the place to be, I guess, if you're a frat boy or you like to look at frat boys. And who doesn't? But anyhow, we're going to be at Spin next, so come on out and have a good time with us there. We can't wait to see you, and hopefully you'll come out to another Gay Idol event if you can't make Spin. We're going to be announcing hopefully some more locations. So, all right, guys, I'm off to go take a nap and get some rest and stare at the cute Kevin Thornton. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah, I think so. Bye. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.